Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Vuyiswa Mqwabeni. Vuyiswa is a CEO, board advisor, entrepreneur, product expert, startup mentor, investor, and diversity expert. She is also a former corporate exec, a startup founder, public speaker, immigrant, and mother. In her career, she's had enormous success and great highs, but by her own admission, she's also had some real lows. Vuyiswa describes her path as one of snakes and ladders. She says, "The truth is, real transformation happens outside your comfort zone. Some days you're on top of the world, other days you're learning the hard way, but you're always growing." One thing about Vuyiswa, she's always authentic. Vuyiswa Mqwabeni, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. It's always like interesting when you hear, your life like read back to you. And it's always interesting. Thank you very much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. So let's talk about how transformation happens outside the comfort zone. How's that relevant for individuals, but also for companies? And I'd love to also know what that means personally for you.
You know, I think this is one of those things that it can happen very fluidly, and one can often hope, right? So if you're in the corporate or any type of setting, professional setting, you can hope that, you know, there's a clarity in terms of this is the vision, this is the direction that we want to go, right? And then as teams, managers, leaders, you simply execute towards that transformation. The reality is, and I think that reality is because transformation has a very large human component, people. And when that human component comes, things can get messy, even with the best of intentions. And that's when that transformation can get ripply. Yeah, it can get messy. It can feel painful, right, to a certain degree, for the leaders themselves, because sometimes you get stuck. What do I actually communicate? What do I actually say? But also for the employees or the management who is like, well, what am I now supposed to do? And I think it's where on both sides, whether you're leading it or you're receiving it, that vision is so necessary to get through it.
And you've been through some transformation yourself. Has it at times felt fluid and at times less fluid?
It's exactly that, right? It's that tension and give and take. For me personally, I think here it's a question of how much do you fight it? Sometimes the transformation I've fought or pushed back. And this is where, that it can get that pain element, or I sometimes say to my husband, where the ugly cry happens. But sometimes it's also too just being, you know, part of the ride, because you can't control everything. And sometimes you just have to go with that flow that comes.
Yeah, I think Mel Robbins talks about let it, just let it. Yeah, just which let I love.
Hmm. Yeah, but I think this only comes to a certain point. Or I only learned that at a certain point, right? It used to be, how many coming from consulting? How many variables can I control here? Sometimes it's very early on in the game. I can't. So I have to see, let the chips fall where they fall, right? But sometimes you can control your part. But sometimes what you can control is only your reaction to it, right? And so I think for me, when you talk about that transformation, let the chips fall, a big thing that I've learned recently or been falling is just to take the benefit of the pause. Take the benefit of the pause just mentally when I approach something, right? Just let me pause for a second here. But even in discussions with people, I didn't realize how important the pause is. And sometimes it's the pause makes the other side uncomfortable. So they start talking. You learn a lot of information. I've learned that in the sales process lately. But the pause is just so important. On the private side, I've also realized how important the pause is for me. You've taken that pause and it's like a point, then act, right? And you do it with so much more of a position of strength rather than that knee-jerk reaction, that fear, or, you know, that complete excitement. But, you know, that excitement then is redirected in an awkward or not maybe the right direction. But the power of the pause is definitely something that I'm taking full advantage of lately.
That's so interesting, Vui, because I remember one manager saying to me, respond, don't react. And I think in that description of responding, not reacting, the pause is inherent in that. But I think you're taking it a step further and you're really seeing the power of pausing. And there's an immense amount of power in that, which I absolutely love. So let's talk about you right now. Right now, you're the CEO of a tech startup called Bloon. You're kind of in the process of launching a skincare brand, and you run your own advisory service for founders. And I know you're getting called on to speak on stages as a keynote speaker. Clearly, you've got a ton of energy. How is it all working out for you?
Yeah, how is it working out for me? I think right now I'm carrying all of those different roles. Sometimes I'm not going to lie, their intention, because just with those roles, in addition to those roles, I'm also a mother. And I'm a mother of two teenies, which you did not prepare me for, Charlotte.
Apologize.
You're a wife, you're a partner. And so sometimes that tension really does arise. Sometimes, however, they're in full harmony. So if I'm being very honest, I'm still trying to figure it out. But what I will say is I've stopped seeing the complexity in that burden, right? Because I think in my younger days, I would have seen this complexity in front of me. Let's try to avoid it at all costs, yeah? But now it's like, this is my life. I chose this. I have that energy. So it adds a bit of texture. It adds a bit of character. It adds a bit of strength. And as long as I have that energy, as long as I'm learning, and as long as those loved ones around me, that being my husband and kids, are cheering me on, why not?
I love why not. And also what I'm seeing is you can flex a certain part of your roles and then you can flex a different part of your roles and all of those things are possible.
Yeah, I think it's also here, it's to do that, I've had to learn a few things, right? The power of 80-20. Perfectionism, you know, is a sickness. It's a true sickness. And I suffered for that. I'm a recovering addict, right? Like, yeah. I am a recovering addict. But you learn that 80-20, and it allows you to be then very razor focused on what are truly the right priorities. And when you can set the right priorities and you can communicate the right priorities, first of all, for myself, but then the teams, right? You can achieve so much more. And then the second thing is just being able to do that heavy lifting, the delegation, right? Of being trusting. I realized my superpower was building great teams, building product, and then building great teams. And it really comes back to, if I'm hiring, you know, the teams and it's being my lieutenants or a developer, the head of F&A, I've had to have trusted these people and I had to be willing to give that trust. But to do that, I also needed to ensure that I've done my best to support them to be great at their jobs, right? And so this is something that I've also said, if this is my superpower, I really had to double down on it because it enables me to wear this different hats.
That 80-20 rule has so much resonance for me because I always feel done is better than perfect. But I've worked for people for whom perfect is better than done. And that was always a tension for me. But I really think that what happens when you operate by 80-20 is that you have to become a manager and a leader who empowers others because you cannot check every single box. So you, in effect, you become a better leader as well.
Yeah, you become just a much better leader, right? You're really focused on what managers, what really matters, yeah? I, like you, had those managers who really, it was about the perfection. And suddenly you're spending on the slide, on the PowerPoint, you know, almost an hour making sure that all the boxes lined up, right? Those boxes lining up were never going to get the extra million out of the budget. They were not going to ensure that your very expensive three new hires basically were onboarded, right? And it was not going to ensure if you were able to close the biggest deal of the quarter. I really look at those managers, and I'm actually quite thankful that I went through that. Yeah, because I had those managers. And for some of those managers, one was such a mentor to me. And I respect her. I still respect her to this day, both as a human and what she achieved and continues to achieve in her career. But very early, it taught me that I did not want to lead like that. That was not how I was going to lead. Someone I respected, I saw what that type of leadership could get, took her to the highest levels in this case, but I just didn't want to lead like that.
Yeah, it's quite enlightening when you actually see it, right?
Yeah. And this was my mentor. Yeah. But what I also respected about her, she was also, you don't need to lead like me, Vui. Right. So I think this is what I also respected her when I said, also one of my favorite humans, because it was this acknowledgement that I was a very different person. And she saw that and was like, you know, I'm giving you a few tools in your tool set. You need to decide what works and what doesn't work for you. Right. Get out there, talk to other people, but I also know a recipe that works.
Well, that takes incredible self-awareness. So props to her and to you. So Vui, you were one of my interviewees for We Need New Leaders, and you talked about the outpouring you received when you got your first really big corporate promotion and how that made you realize that representation really matters. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, representation definitely matters. I think here, for whatever reason, I was very much just making, I was just a girl who was making, or a woman who was making my path up, was doing my thing. I hadn't given so much thought to what representation meant to me personally. I had always had role models around me. So hearing this outpour from the community. And when I say community, it was the Black people of color community specifically. And it was this very much, we are watching and we're cheering for the from the sidelines for you. And it truly did make me understand the power too that representation had and the responsibility I had as a leader. Last Friday, I sat on a panel of four senior executives here in Germany, and we were sitting on a panel for ADAN, and it's one of the largest career fairs for Black African professionals in Germany. And it was the exact same thing of individuals in all walks and form and explaining exactly that, how important this representation is. Just have someone to show that someone like them, someone that has come into Germany as an immigrant, never speaking German. I still do not speak German in a public context. I speak German privately, but I do not get on stage or do it in work. How important that was. I think this is for me when I started to realize representation But then I also started to see how important reputation could be, because your reputation is something, you know, that actually is something that comes in the room before you even do. And so I realized how important my own reputation would be to then support the other people that were coming behind me. But it's one of those things where it's so precious, and I wish we could see more representation, especially in the context of Black people and color in Germany. But it's a step by step.
Yeah, and having people like you in very visible senior executive leadership roles, it helps others, not only because they see, oh, it's possible for me, but also the people who are not of underrepresented minorities also see, oh, it's also possible.
Yeah, so that it comes more of the norm rather than an anomaly, because I think that's how, unfortunately, in many cases, it's, but you're different, or it was a special case. And so I think that's where you want it just to become the norm rather than the exception.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you're the exception, then you're vulnerable, right?
Don't I know it?
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. And so that is the healthy change that we wish to see in society, that we see more underrepresented minorities, we see more people of color, we see more women in positions of power. So we're trying to change that old school style of leadership in our heads. Now, I mentioned the career lows in my introduction, and you did say you were comfortable talking about briefly about your role as a board member of Wirecard, which, for those who don't know, was a company in Germany where it was discovered was riddled with fraud. How do you process that experience now?
Yeah. Do we have a few hours here? I think I've said this in the context of other discussions, but through that process, I met the most broken version of myself. But through that process also, I have met the strongest version of myself. And that process, and it happened I think it forced me I stepped out of the corporate world after that, and I stepped into entrepreneurship. And it was because I really had to reassess, what did I then want for the next phase of my career, right? I was in my early 40s, and at the early 40s, you say, okay, what are the next 10 years of my life going to be? And it really forced me, what is very important for me from a values perspective? Yeah, I needed to be in an environment where it was with the highest level of integrity, with people who I could trust, because I'm a people person, I'm an extrovert, and suddenly I hated all human beings, especially with an Austrian dialect. Right? So Viennese Austrian dialect. But it was once again to reassess. So I had thought it looked, my future or my path would be like this, but now this is really let it be. And I said, I'm a builder. I want to own my own thing. And it really took me to entrepreneurship. I think the Wirecard experience is one of those experiences that will go. We have life-defining moments. So it's a life-defining moment on June 20th at around 4:30 p.m. when the supervisory board member called me and said the money's not there. I will remember that for the rest of my life. But it's something here where it's also forced me now as a leader, when I've made any decision, right? Because often leadership is how you function, how you decide when no one else is there. And so when I've said, whatever I do, am I fully comfortable that this could be written in the newspaper? If this whole meeting transcript was put in a newspaper or someone spoke about it, would I be comfortable with that? Right? So you then start to function very, very, actually, maybe you don't. Maybe there's no difference. But, you know, where I maybe would have taken pause, I have a very high risk tolerance, but it made me take a bit of the pause. You maybe become much more intentional. Yeah, intentional with your words, intentional with your decisions, even the hard ones. But these are some of the ways where it really did shape who I am.
I'm just sorry that it happened to you, but I'm also so happy to see the kind of phoenix that's risen from the ashes with the amount of amazing things that you're doing. And talk to us a little bit about Bloon, the company that you're currently CEO of.
So Bloon is a no-code software development company. And essentially, we are supporting enterprises, so large and medium enterprises, to develop software, right? And so it's very simple of normally now if you want to, in a large company, you want to develop a piece of software internally. You have to give your ticket to IT, get the necessary goes, no goes, and then wait. And this process, and then start to design. And this process can be months, right? And then you got to develop, and then before your implementation, you're talking about a year. And basically, we're talking taking something that can be months and making it into really hours and days to implement enterprise-grade software. It is an AI-powered supported process, so it's not AI-generated code, because that's an interesting, you know, development that there are many benefits to it. But in the enterprise grade, where you have to think about the security, the scalability, this is maybe not where it needs to be currently. And that the great thing is, it's going back to my roots, is we're fully integrated back into SAP, because that's the pain point. How does this integrate? So you're doing everything faster, better, and significantly cheaper. So it really does feel like a full circle moment coming back to, you know, enterprise grade software in the SAP ecosystem.
And doing it with a team of entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great. So we talked briefly about reputation. I'd love to know how you think about your reputation and what are the elements that matter to you?
As I said, I think it's something I see it really protecting at all cost. Yeah, I'll admit I didn't always give it a lot of reverence or maybe the respect. For a very long time, I really focused on the work, the outcomes, the mission, and the reputation felt almost secondary. But that did change with Wirecard because of that very large shadow, right? That black dot or the question. I think it was the question marks, the whispers. People don't come and say anything to your face. But it's then that I really understood. And like I said earlier, you know, your reputation doesn't walk into the room with you. It often speaks first. And suddenly that question mark, something that I had never been, words that are associated with me that had never been there, was really a wake-up call that I hadn't fully valued until my reputation was threatened. And so I really see reputation as a form of currency, right? It's really about a form of currency. And it is one that, you know, money is something that you need to manage, right? And that's how you have to go about it. And I think when you say, what are the elements that are important to me? First is integrity. It's key. Because people have to trust that you will show up with honesty, even when it's uncomfortable. I think the second one for me is consistency. And it's across context. It's across roles. It's across seasons. I really, for me, it's important that people experience the same version of me, whether it's in a boardroom, a brainstorm, or just shooting the shit and having a coffee. Yeah, it truly should be. This was something at the beginning, and when I came to Germany, sometimes people, you can't approach it like that. But I was like, that is me. And I still stay very much by that. And then the last one is really a respect. And it's not for the title or the power. I think too many people give that. But it's really about how you treat people. Those that are above, those that are beside, those ones that are behind me. I will always remember, and this was at an SAP event, one of the board members, and he walked in, and it didn't matter if he engaged with the woman that brought him the tea, the janitor that had to clean, a fellow board member, and he saw a Gardner executive. He was the exact same person. Luckily, he happened to be a South African, so maybe I appreciated the whole the approach that he did, because that was not all of executives. And it's not just executives at SAP, but everywhere that you see, right? And for me, that was about giving that respect to be seen as fair. These are the elements that are really important for me. Actually, and the last point would be accountability.
Yeah.
To take accountability, yeah, for my own outcomes, even for the ones that are hard. We talk about the wire card situation. You must take accountability. And so I think, and I really believe your reputation is built on how you manage those failures. The success is one thing, but really how your failures are. And we talk about, you know, the rising, the phoenix rising from the ashes, is that I want people to understand you can fail. I did it on the biggest stage, you could say, but people say life goes on, right? And but you need to be accountable and say, what can I take from that? You know, what was my role in that? And then move forward.
Yeah, I love those elements for integrity, consistency, respect, and accountability. And I think that by treating yourself with all those things, you also almost automatically end up treating everybody else around you with those things.
Yeah.
I love that. How do you put them into practice?
I think if you were to talk about integrity, is that I do try to communicate openly at all times, right? So I always make sure even a hard decision, even when it's unpopular one, it aligns with my own principles, right? So rather than any short win or a convenient shortcut, right? Because I think that laziness, when you see that convenient shortcut, creates or invokes the greatest disgust in me. So on the integrity side, that's how I try to put that in practice. On the consistency, I think I shared earlier, whether it's I'm leading a team, you know, navigating a crisis, and there's been a lot, or having a casual conversation, it's really showing up, like I said before, the same version of myself, right? Whether that's in clarity, fairness, there should be no different masks for different rooms. Of course, you need to be somewhat self-aware, right? And context does matter, but they shouldn't deviate so much, yeah? I think accountability, like I talked about, I own my mistakes very quickly. Yeah, there are some times with the teams where, guys, I made the wrong call. Like, I just made the wrong call. And you have to be willing to publicly do that when needed. Because then there's an openness then for other people to be willing. You need to be willing to, you lead by example. And then that creates, you know, a certain types of behaviors that you see then reflected in the organization. I believe that as a leader, we set the tone by how we do, right? And so I try to set that tone all across the organization. And this is not just for those big moments, but it really is on the day to day, right? When we talked about, you know, just something as simple as we need to come back in the office. We are at a critical time. It's about me being in the office. I have to drive an hour and a half to get there with the traffic, but it's about me being there first. Because what time did she get up here? And I go to bed, I go home last. It's not about just putting in, but it's to show that I'm actually there and showing up and to be in the trenches with my employees. I think respect is a very important one. I've seen disrespect in many different forms. But one of the things is that I actively listen before I speak. And this was something I had to learn. Right? Because it was, oh, you need to make your voice known, but actively listening before I speak. And so I think because then it's about treating every interaction, whether it's with a junior team member or with my investor, with, I guess, that same level of professionalism and humanity to that discussion, right? If you were to say, but it's that actively listening to give that respect.
Yeah, and for me, that goes back to the pause that we were talking about, which is you're pausing not only to have power in the moment, although that is sometimes useful, but you're also pausing to really allow somebody's voice to be heard.
Yeah. As a leader, that's what you want, to provide your teams that space where they can be seen, they can be heard for what they, you know, what they have to share, and they can be valued for what they're bringing to the table. It should be that simple, but unfortunately, the reality of what is done in practice is different.
It is different, and you and I have both seen that. But what's coming up for me as you're speaking is I'm hearing a leader who is incredibly in touch with their own values, incredibly values-driven, and accords respect to others in every room that you're in. And to me, that's transformational leadership. That's the leadership that doesn't only create great products, but it also transforms the, you know, the people around them, Vui.
I think you just, for me, is I just wanted to create the culture that I would like to come to every day. It was that simple. I had the benefit where I could have that leadership team and align to my vision and what we wanted to do. And we're building that, right? And that means that every new hire has to support that. Interestingly enough, we've had recent hire who did not support it. So after 6 weeks, it was just very apparent we have to part ways. You have to be willing to also make that call. But it was like the output is very important, but the cultural fit is just because that one, everyone has had that one mishire and I'm too small. I can be much more picky about what we want to build as a culture in our company.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is you're actively building the culture, but also protecting the culture, which is lovely.
Oh, yeah. 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 Definitely.
It's lovely. So Vui, as you well know, my deep and profound interest, and also why I wrote We Need New Leaders, is that I believe we have an old style of, or an old understanding of leadership in our brains, of what we think a leader is and what a leader looks like. What can we do collectively and as individuals to change that old leadership archetype?
That's a very loaded question. I start individually. I think you need to lead yourself first. And I really believe for me, the switch or the breakthrough, the transformation as a leader came from that I had to lead. And it's really about holding yourself accountable for the values that you expect from others. That came back, and you said, you've noted that before, the values are important for me, that integrity, that transparency, the empathy, but also the courage. Yeah. I think we have to individually also, we have to challenge quietly and loudly, right? So it's about challenging some of those outdated norms in just everyday decisions, not just when it's safe or popular, right? And I think that's, for me, what speaks very much to the times and maybe what we're seeing in the context of what is happening in the U.S. and that thinking that, of course, it's transferring to Europe and some of the things that we're seeing from just the word or the tension you see, diversity, DEI, etc. But it is that you need to challenge some of those in how you hire. Yeah, the KPIs that you set for your organization, you know, the practices that you suddenly see, these are the norms or the expectations that we have, and to do that individually. I think when you talk about collectively, I think if you don't measure it, it cannot be improved. Is that the saying that we had? What is not measured cannot be improved.
Exactly.
And I think what is measured actually matters. And I think maybe we have to collectively expand the range of what the KPIs actually are. Because some of those other indicators, if you actually did, what is the well-being of this organization, right? Learning, you know, are we investing? What are we actually investing? What are the skills? Are they ready for what is to come? AE with the changes that AI will ultimately bring in all organizations, right? And so if some of these KPIs were really measured and brought into scope organizations would not be facing some of the issues. And I think also, too, the last one is rebuilding trust through transparency. I really believe that we need to move away from leadership as like secrecy and control, right? The board meeting is happening and they're going to be discussing all types of things there with the supervisory board. And so I think somehow we need to, and I understand there's the need for confidentiality, but how can we make the process, you know, more visible? Or maybe, and you can, you know, this better than me, to really explain the why. Maybe we get people involved in the why rather than it becoming just, you know, another bullshit bingo game when, you know, you get the next email and every person can see through it and says, oh God. And you lose the organization again. Right? So I think this for me is what I've really collectively is rebuilding that trust. And I think here in these hard times, and they will come, this will be very, very important.
Trust is everything for sure. And I'm going to remember from what you said, challenge quietly and out loud. I think that's such a powerful statement that I'm going to take away from this interview. So thank you so much for that. And now we're going to go to the questions that I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
Right now, what I'm reading, and I think I'm reading it for the 15th time. Yeah, I think The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. And I think because it teaches a very simple but profound principle, and it is that it doesn't cost more energy to think big than it does to think small.
Love it. That's 80-20, right?
Yeah, like it doesn't, right? So you can say Volkswagen, you can say Aston Martin, right? You can say 1,000 or you can say 10 million. You can do it with the same ease. It's just really, you know, that scope of belief. So I'm a Christian, and the Bible also reminds us that a man think it in his heart, so he is, right? So I think for me, this has been a big thing, that the magic of thinking big. And I need that right now. Heading my software company, launching our beauty brand this summer, right? That's exactly where I've been.
It's so lovely to speak to you now at this point, where you're really thinking big, Vui. It's fantastic. So what are your three tips for leaders who are emerging? They're coming from diverse backgrounds or have diverse identities. They're really seeking that next leadership role. What would be your three tips to them?
My first one is you need to treat every task, both big and small, with excellence. You are always being prepared for a bigger opportunity, whether you know it or not. Yeah, that is the first thing. Second one is you must define your own value system very early. It will guide you through tough career decisions. Do I go left, right, or do I sit this out? And most importantly, it will keep you grounded, right? We didn't talk about that at all, but it's about keeping grounded through, you know, through the journey, right? Can be a tough one. And my last one is to just go for it. If an opportunity scares you, right, where you're told you need to take the next promotion, but it means moving to Singapore for 2 years. If the opportunity scares you, it's probably the right one. Because as we started our conversation, the growth starts when your comfort zone ends.
Well, I love that. You brought that back to the beginning for me. You tied it back very, very neatly. So I really love that, Vui. Thank you so much. And I think you're so right that the transformation happens when the comfort zone ends. That's a lovely thing to remember. So you mentioned, and we all know times are tough. What brings you joy?
The process of building, when a checklist is completed, a bright, sunny day with a little bit of humidity, and a house by the water with my family.
Oh, what a lovely place to end. Vui Mkhwebeni, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.